Games and the Bedrock blog, and I'm here with Joel and Adam for an episode of Wuxia Workshop. For those who don't know what this is, it's distinct from Wuxia Weekend, which is another thing that we've done. Wuxia Workshop is the show where we showcase a Wuxia or a martial arts movie, and then we kind of talk about it after a discussion of the film in a gaming context. And so today we're talking about The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires, which is a 1974 martial arts horror movie directed by Roy Ward Baker. In China, Professor Van Helsing helps eight kung fu trained siblings reclaim their ancestor mountain village, now the domain of seven powerful vampires and their army of undead slaves. The film is a British Hong Kong co-production between Hammer Film Productions and Shaw Brothers Studio. So before we get into anything else, what did you guys think of the movie?
I like the movie. It's one of those movies I would be cautious in my recommendation. I feel like if you're a Shaw Brothers fan and a Hammer fan, you're going to have a really good time with this movie. It's like other people, I'm not entirely sure. It's a very specific taste. But it worked for me. It's a strange... It's got its flaws in places. It's a little... There's some mismatches to it, but I think it's a good movie. I'll go to Joel.
Excellent. Okay, so I have a lot to say about this movie. interestingly, well, I'm a Hammer fan and a Shaw Brothers fan. So first of all, I geeked out when I saw the logo was rolling up. So I was sold even before I saw a single frame of this film, right? So you're right in that recommendation. But I think that I could recommend this to like someone that liked The Golden Voyage of Sinbad. Because a lot of times that was the kind of energy this movie gave off. There's like that classic, like sort of like stagey sort of sets that they have, these big, really big sound stages. And I feel like the amount of Shaw Brothers you have here is almost entirely contained in the fight scenes. Like that's really where you see that element shine. And it doesn't, like, since you don't have a lot of the baggage that Wuxia usually brings in and like a pure Shaw Brothers film has, I feel like it's a little more accessible in that regard. So it is a very... Yeah. I mean, it's very Hammer too, right? So
it's very, it's much more Hammer than Shaw, no question.
It is.
Yeah.
I think I would recommend it more. You could recommend it to either. I think that if someone is a little more into 70s horror, you could kind of point them in this direction and it would work.
Yes.
And I think that if someone was into like sort of golden era, Golden Voyage of Sinbad is the one that comes to mind. If they like that kind of stuff, they could probably get into this too. So that's kind of my impression of it. From a game perspective, this is a very RPG campaign kind of feel to it, right? It's got a really clear, unambiguous premise. It has recognizable characters, which famous NPCs and infamous NPCs, which that name recognition is a lot of fun. Dracula and Van Helsing are here. That's fun. It's always fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the bad guys have a very bosses, mini-bosses, and mobs kind of hierarchy to them. It's really clear to the audience and even to the characters. And they have all the wonderful classic vampiric weaknesses, and there's just enough weirdness to make that, to keep it from being like stale. Like we've not seen this exact thing before. Like the big golden bat idols that the seven vampires have. That's just a nifty little element, right? And you can that's something that if your GM described that to you, you'd be like, oh, that's cool. Give me one of them things. There would at least be one guy who was like, this is going to be my Vietnam necklace. And he'd have like four of them. Every time he killed one, he'd take another trophy. You know, that might've been a dark reference, but you know what I mean? Right.
Yeah.
So that's my impression of the film.
No, this movie's chocolate and peanut butter. I think I grew up loving Hammer. I love Shaw Brothers. And so I think that combination is perfect because they have so much overlap in terms of style. I mean, they're obviously they do very different genres, but there is a lot, like you watch something like the Dracula movie that we were just talking about with Christopher Lee, and you watch like, you know, Come Drink With Me or Lady Hermit, even though those are totally different genres, there's something that feels similar in how they're produced and made. And obviously there are big differences because apparently there was, some tensions on set over some of the production differences and how things were done. But I think it's a really fun movie. I agree with Joel. It's almost one of these movies that if you think somebody might be interested in Wuxia films, but you don't really want to drop like a fully subbed movie on them right away or something that might be a little harder for them to sort of get into, this might be a first stepping stone because they'll at least have like, you know, like faces like David Chang or Chan Chen, the guy who plays the guy who gets, he plays the guy who gets possessed by Dracula. So he's the body of Dracula during the movie. But you'll have these very familiar faces if you, you know, go on to watch Shaw Brothers movies. I think I agree with the 70s action adventure thing. It's sort of, it has that like, it's a very, even though it's a horror movie and a martial arts movie, fundamentally it's an adventure movie. And I think that those are, you know, those are, if people are open to ones where there are a lot of sets, which I love, but I know is a harder sell for modern audiences, you know, Seventh Voyage of Sinbad is a perfect, you know, example to draw from. And I also think, I don't know, I don't know if this was clear to you guys, because I think you guys were watching it on, and I watched the version you guys watched too, but I think you were watching it on YouTube or on a...
I bought it actually.
Oh, you bought it?
I watched it on Blu-ray.
Okay, so then, Adam, you can either disagree or agree with what I'm about to say.
Yeah, I was buying a big batch of movies a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, hey, it's in there. We're doing it on the podcast. I was like, impulse buy.
I actually had to buy it again, too, because mine, when I moved, apparently I might still have it somewhere in my DVD folder, but I couldn't find it, so I had to order another copy. And they're hard to get. It's not the easiest movie to find.
But it's out Joel, now, the, actually. Oh, it's out now.
Well, that's the one I got. I got the one that's available now. That's the one that I got. But Joel, the version that you saw, I don't think the colors and the framing are as apparent in that one as they are in the Blu-ray version.
I would imagine this Blu-ray would definitely make it clear. It's almost like watching it on an old school, like a television. CRTs, it kind of had that energy where there's enough blur that the illusion is.
It's almost like the illusion is a little bit shattered by how clear it is, but it's so beautiful looking because of the color palette and there's like one scene where the first guy playing Dracula, the English actor, I forget who they had playing him, John Forbes Robertson. Yeah, the not Christopher Lee guy playing Dracula, where he's facing off again or talking to Chan Shen, and they're both framed looking at each other, and it just is a, it's a really great shot because of all the use of shadow and the way that the different color lights are reflecting on their faces. And when I saw that scene on the YouTube version, you really, like, you kind of saw it, but it wasn't nearly as breathtaking to look at.
Duly noted. So, this is a film I wouldn't mind owning. I bought some of Voyage of Sinbad. Yeah. I could see buying this kind of with that same.
You know. I have no regret on buying it, definitely.
Yeah, and that's
one of the
things.
I wish you could all see the smugness on Adam's face right now. He knows he's got.
He's a very self-satisfied grin. The other thing that I like about this, and I guess we can get into the discussion now beyond our personal reactions to it, and I know we all wanted to talk about this, was the leads and the fact that you have Peter Cushing and you have David Chang sharing screen time together. I actually posted about this online because I was, you know, thinking about the movie, and I thought they made this movie.
I was actually stunned that in a movie with Peter freaking Cushing playing such a huge role, that he wasn't the reason I continued to enjoy the movie. It was David. Like, that guy is so magnetic.
I'm a big fan of David Chang, no question.
Well, and this is a very good role for him too. Also, he's speaking English in this, and I don't know if it's overdubbed or not. I don't know how they did the voice, so I don't know if that's his actual voice. But yeah, it sounded legit, and also it's interesting because I've always heard him, you know, through dubs and subs, and so to hear him speaking English was just, you know, interesting.
But it was impeccable too. If that was a dub, that was really good. But like, if that's just him speaking, that's a real mastery of the language. Mm-hmm. Like, he sounds great.
Yeah, I was impressed.
Yeah, I thought he was really good as sort of his character's almost like your guide. Like Adam was saying, it's more of a Hammer movie, and so it's kind of the Hammer fans' guide to Shaw Brothers Hong Kong in a way, right? Like that sort of, but I love the relationship that he has with Peter Cushing. I also like that, you know, when Peter Cushing goes to the university, they reject him because they see him as like this like backwards guy who believes in like, and he believes in like all these like legends and things. So he's like, so it's kind of the opposite of what you normally get. And it's not done to like upturn anything deliberately, but it just is sort of a nice, you know,
I love the super refined like Chinese scholars being like, we have 3,000 years of history. Give us some credit, and just stubbing him entirely. Like,
yeah, it was, and he's trying to warn them about Dracula. And it's just not, you know, it's not
Dracula's
landing.
Coming.
But there's one farmer who's the David Chang character. I don't know if he's a farmer, but he's the descendant of a farmer, and he's in the back, and he has this ancestral village where this whole thing happened, and so he, you know, he ends up being, you know, he sends his brothers to go protect Peter Cushing and his son. And I like that dynamic too. I like the dynamic that the vampire hunters are in this world rather frail compared to the martial experts that are surrounding them. And so that was a nice dynamic because it makes the fight scenes not just about, oh, how, you know, who's going to drop next and who's going to stay up. It's, oh, where's Peter? Is he protected? Like, what's going on with Peter and his son? Because they don't have the same resources as the...
He was like a fisticuffs expert, though. He was punching vampires with the best of them.
Well, I would disagree with that. I mean, here's my take on that. It's a little bit inconsistent over the course of the movie.
It was.
Yeah. There are moments where he's just a nincompoop, just flailing uselessly on the ground. And then there are moments where I don't know if he's taking inspiration from David Chang and his brothers, or if he's, you know,
let's just say that he was training while they were on that journey.
Yeah, yeah. He leveled up. He gained a level.
Yeah, he spent some XP between the sessions.
He was low level, they were high level.
Yeah. That's exactly.
Well, he was zero at the start of this movie, and he got to level one at the end of the movie, I think.
That is the good point, that at least the inconsistency goes in one direction over the movie. He becomes more competent. It's not like back and forth the whole movie, I don't think.
And also, towards the end, he's fighting for love because he falls in love with Mei Kwai, I think her name was, the Shisu character. And so, you know, I love the relationship there. I thought that was a really, I don't know, him and Peter Cushing sitting down talking, I thought was, you know, a lot of fun to watch. Maybe you have to be like a real Peter Cushing fan and David Chang fan to appreciate that.
Are fantastic.
There is a David Chang T. Lung collection out at the moment too, that is really good. So if you're a David Chang fan.
I like both of them.
Yeah, the Iron Triangle movies, the movies that star T. Lung and David Chang and are directed by Cheng Che, those are like solid. Vengeance is a really good one to see. Vengeance is one of the
better
ones.
There.
Vengeance is really good. So I don't know. And also just the way that everything was sort of introduced, I just liked the opening. I liked the sort of introduction of the characters. I liked
it is funny how. As a Shaw Brothers fan, when they go like in Transylvania 1805 or whatever year, and I'm like, that's totally like around Hong Kong. I recognize this landscape anywhere.
yeah, this looks suspiciously like Hong Kong. Well, also apparently that was tacked on. Originally, Dracula wasn't going to be part of the story, and they had to add him last minute in order to secure financing for the movie or something. So it was like a requirement.
Mind it, but it didn't need to be there.
Well, think about it. Take out Dracula and the movie actually works a little bit better. You know, it might lose some of its charm, but it works a little bit better in terms of the story structure, if you think about it.
And it does work better in is you have Van Helsing there. And having Van Helsing fight Dracula is a really big flaw, right?
No, that's true.
Resonant. So, like, I don't know.
But you get my point. He could have just faced the other guy, vampire.
Yeah,
well, right? Here's what it would have solved. If they removed the Dracula stuff, you wouldn't have the issue of people going, where's Christopher Lee? It shouldn't Christopher Lee be here? It would have solved that.
He looks like Christopher Lee a little with the hair, but he's got the makeup that makes him look like he just, you know, put his face in a makeup kit. Like,
He did look a little late night horror show host, I have to say.
Well, and I'd say that particular remark is not my own. That is from the commentary track on the DVD.
I watched
the first half of it last night. Because I remember when I first watched this movie, like I felt that the face of because I remembered all the Christopher Lee movies. Then I saw this movie, and something about the appearance of Dracula in this was kind of off to me, and I never really knew why. And then when I listened to that commentary track, he mentioned just that the makeup, it wasn't, because I always thought, oh, it's the actor. I just don't like this actor as Dracula. But he mentioned the the makeup being the issue. And once he pointed that out, I was like, oh yeah, that's definitely what's going on. It's the makeup. Because there's just too much white or something on his face.
I agree.
But yeah, I guess we could talk to, we kind of touched on it, but like the East meets West aspect of the film is, I think, pretty strong. There's two versions of the movie, and I've heard from some people that the other version doesn't tackle this theme as much. But I think in this one, there's definitely an East meets West component to the film.
I also like that they had two romances that kind of highlighted.
Yeah.
They crossed all the romances with East and West. I think that's really cool. And you had a tragic one, which worked really well, both with Wuxia and Hammerhor, and one that had like a heroic saving in the end.
Yeah.
And if you'd asked me to guess, I would have guessed exactly the opposite.
Well, and it was funny too, because initially you think that Vanessa Van Buren and Van Helsing's son are going to end up together because of how they meet. Yep. And then they end up going into, you know, she's interested in David Chang and he's interested in Shisu. And it's also kind of, I mean, the love stories kind of work. They're kind of charming the way that they're done.
They do. And every scene with David Chang, given the eyes to his blonde GF, is really, really fun.
But giving David Chang a lot of praise, I got to give Shisu a lot of praise. I love her in other movies. She's really good. You mentioned she's in Lady Hermit. She's good in The Deadly Breaking Sword, which is a really great Shaw Brothers movie. She is just excellent in this, even though it's a small part, but I mean, she's just fantastic in it.
Yeah, she can really, like, the thing I like about her is I feel like she really can change from role to role a lot when I see her in different movies. You know, because I when I think of her, I always think of Lady Hermit. That's the first thing that pops. And she's very sort of, you know, temperamental in that one. She's got like a, you know, she's got like a firecracker.
I watched that a few weeks ago, actually. Yeah.
And this is a totally different character.
In this movie, like, isn't Van Helsing's son, doesn't he say something along the lines of like, 1 minute, like, you're really dainty and dilettante, next to you're fighting tigress?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The text of the film.
That's fun. Right.
Yeah, that was one of, and it was interesting too, because next to her, he's so ineffectual. Do you know what I mean? He's kind of, he spends a lot of the movie being emasculated. He escorts Vanessa Van Buren home and they're attacked and there's nothing he can do. And then he's saved by the brothers. And then they're in the cave fighting and he's kind of like.
At first. Yeah. They didn't quite make it clear to me that maybe I missed something. I wasn't clear it was the brothers. Like, what? Well, who are these people? What's this? Okay, it all makes sense now.
Well, that's a very Wuxia moment when, like, the heroes that have been there the whole time just inexplicably to the audience show up and start doing stuff. If you're in a Wuxia mindset, you're like, oh, of course, the Marshall Brotherhood, the Zhang Hu, or blah, blah, blah. But if you're not, if you're like a Hammer Horror guy, you're like, who the hell are these dudes? They explain it to you, and it's lovely.
And there's that whole guy, the guy that he inadvertently offended, who then, like, kind of, you know, he attacks him there and then he attacks them on the road. You know, those are very Wuxia like.
That gangster type character was great. I mean, I don't know if we actually hear him say a line of dialogue at all, but he was just a fantastic presence in that scene.
He didn't even say anything, I don't think. I think you're right, because I think he just looked upset because the British consul says you've offended him because he wants to take the woman home and I think she's like not comfortable with it. So Van Helsing's son steps in and says, oh no, I already had plans to take her home. And that causes the guy to lose face and then go on the offensive.
He was a small time thug. I love the scene where they fight. And then right after that, because they don't have any casualties, they slaughter these losers and it pans out, the camera does. And it's just this field of bodies and they just turn their backs on it and leave them rotting like melons in the sun. It's my favorite scene in the movie. Those guys were chumps. Anyway, love it.
What did you guys think? Oh, go ahead.
That's a comment.
I was gonna say, what did you think of the lore, the vampire lore in this movie? Was it adequate for you? Was it, you know, did you
I like the moment, this goes along with the East meets West thing, where Van Helsing is talking about how in Europe they shy away from the cross, but here it's going to be the Lord Buddha that does it, because they show that earlier in the film. Mm-hmm. And I like that he recognizes that there's something holy about their religion that's still going to work on their local vampires. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, they do that. They do the parallel kind of thing too, where at the very beginning of the movie, when that guy who gets possessed by Dracula is heading through Transylvania, and there's that little kind of Christian altar thing that he finds in the wilderness, and you find like there's kind of a one they find in China later in the movie, and they're almost the exact same kind of little shrine.
Right. It's, and in both cases, it's super toxic to the vampires. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
I would have liked more explanation about what's going on with... Okay, so the first vampire they killed, the farmer kills him in the backstory that Van Helsing's telling.
He takes
off his golden bat, and like this stuff starts leaking out of him. And then later, in an unrelated scene, he touches the altar of Buddha and dies. And I want to know what's up with the bats. Are they just bling? Did they keep their souls?
No, he said to them... So number one, the altar killed him because it was holy, I think. I think that was the god smiting him. But I have the note here. He says, the golden medallion is the symbol of their undead life force, I think. I'm pretty sure that's what he said.
Yeah, there was something like that, but it was really vague because later on, the way you kill them is the way you kill any vampire. You kill them to the heart, you set them on fire, you make them touch something holy. Mm.
It's not clear to me what would happen. Something definitely left his body when he took off.
Yeah.
So it did something to him. I don't know. I mean, if I were gaming this, and we'll get into that later, but I would probably have it make him weaker, or I would probably just have it maybe kill them. Maybe that's one way you can kill them.
Yeah, he kills them over time, like a poison.
Yeah, but I don't know if in this movie, but the other thing is, he said he can use that medallion to resurrect the vampire who died. So
that's why they had to keep it. I remember that bit. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good bit, though. You can use that to resurrect them. That's a great reason for the bad guys to come after you, which they do.
Yeah.
So I like that bit.
I also kind of wanted to know more what was up with that ritual, because they had these like bare-breasted women up on there are a lot of boobies in this movie. Over a cauldron of boiling blood, I think, because they were on these planks where the blood would just flow down.
I was confused by that. Yeah, I mean, it didn't need to be explained, but I was curious.
What the stakes were,
I was imagining this is like Dracula in his more economical years, like being frugal with the blood. So that, like, all the blood that they miss just goes down into the basin. But yeah,
we gotta get a better return on our blood extractions. Yeah,
but I thought that was kind of, again, that's kind. I mean, there are Shaw Brothers movies that do that, but there are also a lot of Hammer movies that do that. So I don't know who can bear the blame for the
inexplicable boiling cauldron of evil blood. Yeah, like,
well, no, the boobies.
Because
Hammer's famous for that too. So
I'm not here to complain about seeing lots of boobies.
Well, I'm not saying to blame as in who are we going to, rebuke for it. I'm just saying I don't know if that's more of a Shaw Brothers thing or more of a Hammer Studios, Hammer Films.
The money that it was Hammer Studios. That feels like a Hammer Studios thing.
I don't know. There's a lot of Shaw Brothers movies where that's going on too.
I like how it wasn't all the actors.
Not in this time frame though. I feel, because it's like what, early 70s. I feel
it's
like
70s. No, this is like. This is post Intimate Confessions of a Chinese Courtesan. There are scenes from that.
Fair enough. Yeah, I defer to your greater knowledge.
I mean, also they made a lot of movies that weren't martial, like Shaw Brothers was a big studio. So they didn't just make martial arts movies, and a lot of the non-martial arts movies have all kinds of,
get into some shenanigans, do they? Okay, so the lore. Get back to the lore question. We booby diverged because we're a bunch of dudes here. But like, okay, getting back to the lore question for a second, I wanted a little more. It was, what we had was great. I liked that it blended the East Meets West theme and advanced that. I would have liked to know a little bit more. Like, what's the origin of the Seven Golden Vampires? What's with this cauldron of blood? What's with Dracula taking it? Why do they have like a dude that's not a vampire that's like just their pal that has its power from them? Like, is he a necromancer? Like, what's going on with him?
Yeah, I didn't know what that guy's backstory. Yeah, I would have liked a little bit more on that too. I agree. I liked what lore we got. I thought it was sufficient for the movie, but it could have used a little more. They could have been a bit more indulgent in some of the exposition scenes, I thought.
Certainly from the standpoint of using this as a workshop for an RPG, it could have given us more to build up our stat blocks with.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is we're looking at it from, we need this information, guys, and you're not providing it. Yeah. We're just going to start making stuff up, and it's not necessarily going to be pretty.
This is the RPG designer's motto, man.
But what did you guys think of the fight scenes?
they were okay. This wasn't a movie I go, dude, if you want to see some excellent fight scenes, this is the one. They did the job. They weren't, they weren't terrible.
So I agree with you in terms of martial arts, but in terms of them being battles, the scale was really impressive. Right?
Yeah, they were big.
Wars that were happening in this movie between a small army of Wuxia dudes and the undead Van Helsing in it. That was pretty cool. They managed to make some very confusing scenes. Like, maybe confusing in terms of a lot of things happening. Clear, right? They would have mobs of these lesser vampire zombie things fighting individual overwhelmed martial artists. But what was communicated to the audience was, this guy is overwhelmed. He's been drawn off the pack, and now he's getting mobbed. And then they would zoom out and show either him finding a way to get out of there or meeting his hideous demise. And in each case, it was very clear. So I think in terms of functionality, within the broader frame of the movie, these are extremely well-done fight scenes. In terms of individual spectacle, they're not the best. They're good, but they're not the best. This isn't like 8 Legendary Weapons of China or something like that, where it's...
Yeah, that's entirely fair. Yeah, I my comment really does just refer to it very specifically as Shaw Brothers martial arts thing. They were very clear. I was never confused as to what was happening with the
It wouldn't be one where you'd want to recommend it if you're trying to showcase what Shaw Brothers does in terms of they're better movies but they have effective moments in terms of there are these just satisfying points in the fights, like when Van Helsing tells them to go for the heart and they start stabbing them in the heart. That was like satisfying. Right, was great. But
I love that Peter Cushing is like shouting this to this giant soundstage. It was really cool, right?
Yeah.
Like, go for the heart. I mean, it's a little redundant because of course, but.
Well, and technically they already knew that information, but still I liked the way that, that moment played out.
One of the things that
was him making a scholar role to like give a bonus to the character.
That's what I was gonna. I was picturing like a frantic research type thing, or something like that.
Give him an extra document role.
Yeah, no, and perfect. It's like a bard role basically. So there's that, but like also this movie. One of the things that probably kept it from getting as martial arty as it could was the fact they had to find stuff that Peter Cushing could do that could help in the fight scenes, so they had to keep it grounded enough that it looked like aging Peter Cushing, who was the skeleton of a man, could fight these like martial arts experts. So they gave him a stick with fire on it.
Honestly, Peter Cushing did a lot better than his son, in my opinion. Like he was 100%. Still kind of holding his own. His son was just like putting his gun. Like, I didn't know if he wanted Peter to take Cushing. His gun out or not. It was just very frustrating.
I love when he took his gun out and it failed and he threw it. That was that was a great unintentional funny moment. Or maybe that was supposed to be comedy. But
I think he's just kind of in a way, he's emasculated in a lot of these battles. It just seemed to be his character.
A redeeming masculine moment when he saves his lady friend in the end. But
they kind of give him. But let me ask you this. Did you buy that? After you saw her kicking ass and you saw him fumbling with his gun, did you buy that he was? Yeah,
he spent the XP. It was fine.
That's an argument against something like Benny's, because that's what would happen if somebody used a Benny.
Even in the absence of Benny's, once in a while, 5% of the time, the worst character will roll a 20.
That's true.
You said yourself, Brenner, it's the power of love, I think.
Of love. Okay, yeah, yeah. I'm hoisted on my own petard. Love.
How dare you want a dramatic satisfaction from something?
No, I'm fine with how it ended. I'm just saying in terms of him,
I think it would have been way funnier if he was the one getting strapped down and she saved him, which I think they do that right afterward, don't they?
I also like how they all kind of abandoned Peter Cushing at the end. Like, he just faces Dracula on his own because they all walk outside.
I feel like there's an off-screen time. He's like, I have to do this alone. This is personal, He just told everyone to stand off. He's like,
let's do
this.
That's kind of weird. He's off in his own little universe at the very end of it. Maybe that's Dracula's superpower. He kind of mystically pushes everyone away.
You know, It could be because Brendan, you mentioned they added the Dracula thing later. Maybe this scene was shot later.
Maybe they weren't
like
there.
They just got Cushing to come in and do that scene. The rest of the cast was off.
I don't know at what point that was tacked on. I don't know if they tacked it onto the script at a late stage or if it was tacked onto the movie itself at a late stage. What did you guys think of the horror effects of the movie? Because I know, Adam, you said you liked some of the practical effects in this.
I did. There's two scenes in the movie where the dead kind of, one where the farmer's running away and they chase the farmer. And then when they go attack the town, I think there's the scene. Oh, no, actually, when they go attack them in the town, you see all the dead kind of right there. Both those scenes were really great kind of zombie rising scenes. Yeah. They were really, really beautiful and dramatically effective.
I agree.
I loved those scenes.
Yeah, I like the dead coming out from the earth scene.
Everything to do with the dead special effects was really cool. The corpse is turning into ash or melting.
Yeah.
The ghost.
They're kind of deflating.
It's cool. I mean, you can see how they did it, but so it looks cool.
Look great. You know? No, I have to say,
you can see how they did the bats too, you know, but this is fun.
Oh, yeah. The bats. It made me think too, the way the vampires were kind of deflating, it made me think of going to a later movie, Journey to the West, Conquering the Demons, that fight in the restaurant where she's punching the demons and they're just all kind of it's like they're made out of rubber and she's just like indenting them. I don't know if there's any connection at all, but it just reminded me of that.
Yeah, that's
good,
a good movie
too.
That's
a great movie. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Have we done that movie? I can't remember.
Yeah, we did that on a Wuxia weekend.
Okay.
I bought that. I love that movie.
Journey to the West is such a, this is the gift that keeps on giving, man. I love Journey to the West. Anything they do with that property is so amazing.
And I also like the idea of the vampires on horseback. I don't know why, but I feel like I don't feel like I've seen that many vampires on horseback.
Honestly,
like
in Western vampire law, horses are terrified of vampires. Yeah. So you really couldn't do that in a traditional Dracula movie, because that's one of those things. It's like, oh, the horses are getting skittish, you know.
That's true. Vampire. It works so well. Like, it makes them more terrifying for them.
Wait a minute, we saw Boris Karloff as a vampire on a horse.
That's true. But he was a specific subtype of vampire with a whole different name. Right, like I forget what they were called.
Which movie are we talking about here?
The Black Sabbath.
There
was a weird.
They made a Ravenloft monster based because
It's the name of that segment. It's the name of the type of vampire, but I've forgotten.
Yeah. I'll look it up.
So we have seen something akin to that, and I've seen it in Warhammer Fantasy. Like, you can have a mounted vampire. Although, if you're a real man, you have it mounted on some kind of undead dragon or wyvern. I don't know if they still do that.
The Werdulak.
Both Warhammer and that Boris Karloff segment are set prior to Dracula. So clearly there was an incident that made all horses terrified of vampires by the 1800s.
I think the origin of... I've always assumed the origin of Dracula to be satanic, and I think the origin of the Werdulak is a little bit more like, you know, kind of a curse you bring on yourself or something. I don't know. It just seems a little different.
It is an entirely different type of creature. Yeah, I mean, vampires don't have the whole they must, you know, they feed on the ones they love kind of thing.
Interestingly, that's what the New England vampire was lore was about, was feasting on your relatives, because it was all based around consumption and people in the same household, you know. So we're on the workshop segment now.
Excellent.
So this is for the, we have, I think we did an episode of this, like, what, Joel, in the fall, am I mistaken? Or
we need to do more of these because we're gamers.
Is
what we do.
So this is where we talk about how we take, and both me and Joel are, you know, designers. So we talk about how we would gamify this at our table more than like how we're not necessarily thinking in terms of publishing, but just how, like, more how we would game it at the table. I don't know, Joel, if you had any thoughts or if you wanted me to start. Or
my first thoughts is, I mean, this is the 70s, right? So it's right about the right era. And like, it's you and me we're talking about. So the two things that came to mind was, what if I had Ravenloft and I was bringing in elements from Oriental Adventures? Like, that's my first place I went to. And I feel like
You could do that.
Description of the film.
Well, there was a domain. I can't remember the name of it. I think it's ICATH or ICATH. I can't remember the name of it. But there was like an Oriental Adventures domain in Ravenloft that was an Isle of Dread. And also there was the in 2E they had the Oriental Vampire in second edition. And if you look at that entry, the abilities are different, but it kind of looks like maybe it's modeled a little after the imagery of the vampire in this one with the long hair and everything. But I think Ravenloft definitely, I mean, Ravenloft is a Hammer Studio and Universal Studio homage in many ways. And so I feel like anything from Hammer Studio, you could turn into a Ravenloft adventure with very little issue.
I want to gamify the sort of horror element of it. Like Ravenloft is great for that. You know, the black box that you showed me, it begins with a bunch of what if your character is scared? What if your character is getting corrupted? What if your character is going insane? Like, I really, really like that because it makes the horror that your character is dealing with a tactical consideration for the player. I really like when that happens. When there's some harmony between the experiences. You don't have to be scared as a player, but being in the right headspace or having elements in the game that bring you to that headspace, I really like that. I like that resonance when I'm GMing something.
Well, here's where, because I had an idea for an adventure. I wasn't thinking Ravenloft, but now that you're talking Ravenloft, the way that I would probably approach that, because people who don't know, Ravenloft is built very much on a number of foundations. There's like the Ravenloft module, the original Ravenloft module. There's the Black Box set, and there's Feast of Goblins, and those are very important components. But after that are the Von Richten books, and those are instrumental in establishing the Monster Hunt as the basis of play, and it expands on something that you first see in the Black Box set, which is this idea that every monster you face is unique. And so if you're facing Dracula, you're facing Dracula, he's not just a generic vampire. And if you're facing some other vampire, they're unique too, and so they're going to have unique weaknesses, unique powers. They're going to also fit into the general category of monster they are oftentimes, but the reason they do that is to give the players a reason to have to investigate and research. So you don't just walk in knowing, oh, I got to stab him in the heart. You have to research. And so this is a movie where research is clearly very important. And if I wanted to do this as a one shot and I specifically wanted to be like, hey, let's do something kind of like Curse of the Seven Golden Vampires, I might say to the players, how do you guys all feel about playing seven monks in a Ravenloft campaign? And then maybe the adventure is there's some vampire who's, you know, a famous vampire similar to how Dracula is, but he's from a region that's really far from where these guys are, and there's an expert who's maybe also from that region who can maybe help them, but he's also incredibly frail. He's not a monk, he's like, you know, first level thief or something. Or, you know, if I were doing Strange Tales of Songling, he would have been a scholar. But maybe he's a bard. I think in AD&D, you might have to be a bard or something. I don't know if you do class him, yeah. I don't know what you'd be able to make him. It's kind of hard because Van Helsing, there's not really a character class for Van Helsing, I feel.
He's kind of like an old
No, cleric. Actually, cleric was based on Van Helsing, actually.
Yeah, but he's not a cleric.
I'm not saying the class works for that, but I'm saying that is, oddly enough, the basis of clerics.
Yeah, no, I thought of that, but the problem is the cleric is too meaty, and Van Helsing in this is very feeble. And so
you could drop his stats really far down, though.
I think Bard's a better fix
because Bards in most systems, in most D&D versions, have a ton of skills points and they have the legend lore ability. So basically they could just put all those skill points into, knowledge and stuff. They've got the Bard of lore ability.
I might just make him a sage and not give him a class. I don't know. Like whatever I do.
There you go. That's the solution. Yes.
Yeah. You sort of want to minimize your prep there. You don't have to, this isn't a player facing thing, right? He's an NPC. So he just has to be able to stuff. You can have one hit point for all you care.
But the fun of it would come in having part of the adventure be having to protect this guy so that he doesn't die before you confront the vampire. So you have this person who's vital for the survival. And obviously you would need to have a backup plan in case the guy does die. Like there's probably got to be some other way to beat the vampire.
You don't want him to be super instrumental, but you definitely want him to be a huge advantage. Like on the scale of, bringing a holy symbol, a cleric, a mirror, etc. to the Dracula fight. you don't have those things, you can still beat a vampire. It just sucks, you know?
And so
I really like the strategic consideration and how it alters every fight when you suddenly have this huge liability in the middle of it that you've got to protect.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I like
That's
that.
That's fun.
I'd also, because the whole premise of it is the characters would be discovering how to beat him, and every player in your group would know about the heart and cutting off the head and all that stuff.
I would
make this particular vampire have something odd, like you have to take out his eyes, or you have to, you know, something unusual. You have to baptize him in holy water, you know, something that isn't immediately intuitive that only this sage character would be able to explain to them.
To preserve the puzzle element, it's got to be something weird like that. And we have something that was delivered in this movie, which is the golden bat things.
Yeah.
Maybe they function kind of like a phylactery, you know, and like it doesn't have to be near him. So you got to find the stupid golden bat first. Then you can find, maybe you can only find him when you're wearing the bat.
Here would be an idea. So we have that cauldron that we couldn't really explain with the blood and the rituals. It would amp up the adventure maybe to have this be like, for lack of a better term, like a ritual vampire, right? Like a vampire who, rather than, you know, feeding necessarily, is drawing the life force into this ritual vessel, and that's how they're sustaining themselves. And that you could connect that to the bat medallion, the golden bat medallion, maybe.
The movie actually sort of supports that, because when they drop the final of the seven golden vampires into it, it dries up the whole cauldron. It kills him like it's made of acid, and then it's dry. And only after that can they beat Dracula. So, you know, maybe that was what the cauldron actually did.
That's maybe it's like, but something like that. Also, that would add into the mix that the plot in the movie of them like rounding up villagers so that they can have, you know, women to use for the ritual. So, you know, it gives you this ongoing threat that's plaguing the region that kind of makes the stakes more clear.
We can't go past this point without using the excuse to use the term exsanguinate.
He's exsanguinate.
I mean, if you have a chance to use that word, you use it, man. Talking about vampires in that particular scene, that's exactly what's happening.
But I think it would make a really sound adventure. I mean, you could do it a million different ways too. I don't think
what's so charming about this movie is, like, if you wanted to do it as an adventure, you know, kind of taking the movie formula and saying I want them to get to this destination, you can set it up that way. But it works almost as well if you just randomly encounter this in a hex when you're doing a sandbox style thing.
Yeah,
just wander around and all of a sudden there's these like creepy looking vampire dudes on horseback and they can summon an army of the dead. There's a seven-layer pagoda in the background, and you're just like, what's going on with this hex?
That's perfect. Works. That's perfect.
It also does have the village in peril thing as an RPG hook, too. I mean, you do have that whole scene. The villagers are involved in that big fight scene at the town, too. So that's another way you can get there.
Yeah, and you could also draw in I forget the name of the farmer, but the farmer who faced the vampires at the beginning.
Yeah.
You could probably throw in like a magic item related to that, like his robe or his, I think he had a hoe that he was using.
Well, they find a sword, don't they?
Huh?
They find the sword of the vampire he killed, don't they? I mean, like, that feels like a great artifact. Like,
that would be, but I'm thinking something related to the farmer that would have some kind of like positive, you know, like.
Well, okay, so here's what I'm stealing from Legends of the Wulin. What if in battling that vampire, through sheer coincidence, the way it died was it tried to hit him with its sword, but after piercing him, it also pierced the statue of the Buddha, and it acted as a conduit to fry the vampire, but it also purified the sword. And the
would definitely be cool. Something like that would work for sure. But having some
stole that from Legends of the Wulin.
But some holy item or some magic item inspired by that backstory that's related to it would work.
Well, especially because If we're thinking that the players are the brothers, right, and the one sister, but I'm just going to call them the brothers because I'm lazy, then they would have heard of that either through, you know, like, because it comes down to them as a legend, right? Like, they're descendants from this guy, but, like, it's Van Helsing that tells the legend. They're like, oh, we've heard that legend too. So that's great. That's a hook, you know?
Yeah.
And also, I mean, the other thing that I obviously was thinking was, oh, I'm going to, this would make a very good Strange Tales of Songling adventure. So like, you know, I was thinking in those terms too. But the I mean, only challenge is.
Here's my question to you as the guy who made Strange Tales of Songling. And in this unofficial capacity, do you feel comfortable with the Western elements? Because I know that before the podcast, you're like, I wanted to keep it kind of pure when I was doing it. So I didn't want to do any East meets West thing. But in your home game, would you make an exception to that? Do you think that works for this? Or would you just kind of keep it the way you got it?
Yeah. Because Joel asked me if the movie was an influence when I made Strange Tales of Songling or Ogre Gate. And it wasn't. It wasn't a movie that I was... In fact, I was consciously trying not to be influenced by it because it was one of these East meets West type movies. And I didn't want to like, I don't know. I just wanted it to be based on the Poo Songling source material as best I could do it. That said, the one element that I think is in there that you might be able to sort of work with is I'm actually double checking because I'm not even sure if I remember this 100% accurately. But I think that in the vampire entries, there is a blood draining vampire. And you could probably, and again, it's still more of a Chinese vampire. It's hopping and everything like that. But you could take that and the way that it works is a lot more similar to a Western vampire. And there are Mr. Vampire movies where the Western vampires do show up. So I think that, you could do it that way. I'm more interested in, oh, go ahead, Adam.
I was going to say, I'm currently running Strange Tales of Songling at the moment. That's my current game. And I'm saying that scholars, like the scholar thing solves the Van Helsing problem. I mean, the scholar, you don't really need to do almost nothing to use the scholar class. So that's on the player end. You got wandering swords. It's like you've got your bases covered. You just got like a group of wandering swords and a scholar. You've got the player end covered. And I mean, making the monster is effectively the easy part, I think, because NPCs, it's so much easier to design an NPC monster than to design a player character class that has to level up and have sustainability. So I think it'd be very easy to do.
With player facing stuff is a nightmare to design versus monsters. Monsters are one and done. They just have to do one thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, the other thing I was thinking too was, because I was thinking Strange Tales, I was like, you know, and I've been doing Strange Tales New England, so that's a modern game, so it's not really suited for what we're talking about. But I had the idea of, well, I kind of like the idea of instead of the West going to the East coming to the West. And I was thinking of like, you know, just because I've been doing like the historical portion of that book, I was thinking in terms of like, you know, the settlement of the Massachusetts Bay Colony and things like that, and how trade was so important and how you could easily see a Jiangxi or a group of Jiangxi being imported to this village of, you know, of local, you know, Salemites or something, you know? And so I thought that would be, you know, especially if it was like maybe just prior or during the witch craze period, because during that period, there were a lot of other
during the witch craze. Like if you were doing this as like an investigation game, kind of like a Call of Cthulhu sort of thing, or I guess you just do, in your native system, but like if it wasn't really combat focused, and so you have it happen during the witch trials, and it's just this giant red herring. They keep accusing women of all these exsanguinated corpses and other weird goings on, and then it's a freaking Jiangxi that was imported, and like that's the real mastermind. God, that's cool. And like, how would you even fight that? Like,
I thought that would be kind of interesting, you know. And whether he's the main bad guy or the person who imported it is that, you know, like I hadn't quite thought out all the, because you could sort of see sort of this like Lovecraftian type figure who was like an East India trader who brings the Jiangxi, you know, and so I just pictured like this like mahogany coffin with like, you know, like all, you know, just you could sort of see how it would work. And you know, and so maybe like a you know, like a an early, like maybe a wealthy merchant or something is using the Jiangxi to sort of, you know, deal with his enemies in the, you know, in like the rum trade really or something, too. You know, like,
because like all the women that get accused could be framed and they could just be like, you know, people that were competing in business at the time. So that could be a good connection for players to explore, like, why are all of this dude's rivals are being accused of witchcraft? And like, it's, you know, what's going on with that? One of them could even hire you. Like, she suspects she's next on the list, and she's like, okay, look, you guys have got to get ahead of this.
Make one of the women either a relative or a wife of one of the PCs too. Then you really got some stakes.
Yeah, this is another really good hook.
The only challenge is I didn't know. Obviously the scholar character, you could have a Van Helsing can be a scholar. That's fine. But I was like, oh, maybe I need a class for a Puritan minister or something. That was the one, weak link in the concept. But then maybe you don't. Maybe the Puritan minister should be powerless in the face of the Jiangxi. Maybe that's,
it's not like this movie had divine powers or anything explicitly. I mean, obviously you have the altar and stuff, but there's no character wielding that.
There was no priest. There's no priest. There's no Taoist priest or Buddhist monk or Catholic priest coming doing anything.
You make the Puritan priest basically the cat's paw of the villain who's accusing these people. He's the one. He's basically going along. He's kind of in that guy's pocket to an extent too. That would be another.
Yeah, he can even be duped. He's a figurehead essentially.
Exactly. He doesn't have to be in on it, but he's effectively his agent, whether he knows it or not. Yeah.
Yeah. Then you could use my favorite main bad guy NPC phrase, where he's asked about it, and I always have him say the same thing. Well, you never discard a useful tool. I love that phrase. So it's such a bad guy phrase.
Samuel Parris be like the minion of the hopping vampire? Is that
A-plus game designer. There's so many ways.
Well, there's always peril in doing anything like that. Usually when I set something in a historical period, I wouldn't... Samuel Parris, I think, is too known to do. It's not like using Thomas Jefferson, but it's definitely definitely a name to recognize.
I don't know, man.
It depends on the mood you're going for. If you want it to be a fun sort of, loose evening of entertainment, then go with Samuel Parris. If you want to lean more into the horror, maybe pick a slightly different year or a different Puritan minister is the
if you're doing this as a one evening one shot, Samuel Parris would work if you want the characters to figure things out quickly. We're just doing our Halloween night episode. Back to our regular campaign. Yes. You want everything to be obvious
for a Halloween for a Halloween session. It would be perfect because you can have the corniness of Samuel Parris would work.
That and name recognition is an element of this film, right? Dracula.
True.
That's kind of in the spirit of it.
Okay, that's a fair point. And Van Helsing is a name people recognize too. So that could certainly work. I'd also be tempted. Well, it's out of his time, but if there was a way to get Van Helsing or one of his ancestors over,
clearly you would have to have his grandchild by way of this movie. Because his son and his love interest survive. So they have a kid.
But that wouldn't work because the Salem Witch Trials is way before.
Oh, no, you're right. No, I'm going the wrong way.
So it would have to. So, unless it's, if you wanted to introduce time travel, I wouldn't advise it. That would be one way to do it. But you could have an earlier Van Helsing, but I might just leave him out just to avoid having to sort of, fit that in. Or I would advance the timeline to the 1800s or something.
When were the Salem Witch Trials? I don't know enough about history.
1692.
Okay, that's a while ago. Oh man.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a very, it's also a very different, you're dealing with a very different area in terms of.
And the action of Dracula takes place in the 1800s. Wow, you never think about it as a modern thing. But I guess it
it's late 1800s though. It's 1890s, I think, is
Didn't the book come out 1895 or something?
Yeah, 1895 is the number I had in my head that I wasn't certain I wanted to say, but 1895 sounds right.
But it's very
modern.
Yeah, so I mean, but again, that's what would make it so interesting is having sort of this weird vampire in 1692, Salem when people are expecting witches to be the thing going on.
To go back to Joel's point, I think Dracula feels older than it is sometimes because you've got the whole Transylvania period of it where it's very remote versus the London. So it's kind of the past versus modern thing as an element of it.
True. And also I think Dracula's own history kind of goes back much further. So there is that aspect to it. You could in fact have it be, you would really be playing with fire, but you could have it be Dracula. there's nothing stopping you from
killing
Dracula in 1692 colonial New England.
After Vlad the Impaler, if you want to go with the Bram Stoker's Dracula movie continuity where he's just Vlad the Impaler, then that works pretty good.
Yep.
200 years later.
So, but yeah, I don't know. Any other things we want to add on this one, or are we at the end of this?
I could probably talk with diminishing returns for the next 2 hours, but I think we're at the end of it. I think we hit an hour. We've did the fun stuff. So let's call it there. Let's wrap this one up. I'm very satisfied with this conversation so far. And also now I got to do more prep.
Yeah. So, and again, unfortunately, this one is not, I mean, I think the Blu-ray, Adam, is available, right? Like, you can get the Blu-ray on Amazon.
Yeah,
and stuff
go
still.
Shout Factory on their Scream Factory
is
label.
It,
that's where I picked it up.
Is it all, I'm trying to remember, is it all region or is it not all region?
Oh, I've got it in my hand. Let me read the back of the case, because, you guys talk while I'm looking at this.
Okay. Well, one thing that people should keep in mind is if you do want to get physical media like that, that's, you know, sometimes not always easy to get your hands on, getting a multi-region player is a really good investment, so you don't have to worry about this question.
It's definitely, if you're American, it's region one, definitely. I mean, I have region one. I was checking if it was all region or not. I can't.
I think it's an all region one, but I can't remember.
Okay, it does. It does not mention region anywhere.
Okay. There's nothing more disappointing than getting in a movie that you've been trying to get your hands on forever, putting it in, and then it looks like shit because it's out of region, and you know it's just pretty much unwatchable.
So
it's available. It's not something that you could easily stream. You know, I think there's like an obscure YouTube channel where it might be up, but it's not the highest of quality there. So, this is one where I think if you're a Shaw Brothers fan, if you're a Hammer Films fan, you would be interested in this. And if you also just kind of like unusual movies, it's certainly, you know, it's definitely noteworthy. Yeah.
It's good inspiration if you're going to run something. I think that the observation I made earlier where it's like, this feels like an RPG. Yeah, this kind of, well, as you watch it, it kind of tells you what the player experience is going to be. Mm-hmm. You know, like you want them fighting groups of weaker enemies punctuated by these more powerful vampires. You want there to be a really powerful NPC in the background manipulating things. You want a big, obvious, like that pagoda that they've got is like so huge. See from a distance, it's such a hex crawl element. You know, this is the stuff you want. You want a scholar that winds up being a liability. You know, the elements almost write themselves, and so the movie is really good for that. If you're gonna go and do something horror, or do something wuxia, or do something wuxia and horror, here you go. This is hand delivered to you. It's perfect. It's a perfect movie for that.
Yeah, and so I guess with that, we'll head out, and we will talk to everyone later.